Good morning. We continue our sermon series on parables this morning with the parable of the prodigal son. This parable is perhaps more than any other. This parable shows us the heart of the Christian faith. And at its center is not a prodigal son, as it is, this story is often called, but instead is found a prodigal God. Now, the story has been known as the prodigal son for ages, generations, but there's more to this story than just a wasteful little brother. What it really points to is how this father is extravagant to both of his two lost sons. Let's focus on the word prodigal for a moment. What does it mean? Well, according to the small group series that the church is working through currently by Timothy Keller, prodigal is best defined in two ways. First way is to be recklessly extravagant. Now, this is more than being generous. It's more than being giving. It is sacrificing to the point that it hurts. And this father in the story is willing to give up everything for the sake of both of his sons. Prodigal also means to have spent everything. Nothing left over. There's nothing left to give. You know that feeling that you get after a good workout? You know, so we are at the tail end of January. I'm wondering where we're all at with our New Year's resolutions to get more in shape. I actually stuck with it for this past month. I've lost a couple pounds, but I remember my first week back in the gym. And you know, when after you've taken a pause from working out for a while, and then that next day or two afterwards, like your arms don't work, you can't walk properly. You know what I mean? Where it's like you have absolutely nothing left to give. That's what it means to be prodigal. Giving it your all with reckless abandon. The heart of the Christian faith is that we have a prodigal God, and he is prodigal with each and every one of us. More than we can possibly imagine. And this prodigal heart is one of the key reasons why everyone is fascinated by Jesus. In the entire history of the world, all the people in the world, there is no other person who's been written about more or talked about more than the person of Jesus. This is because he appeals to many different kinds of people. No matter the walk in life, Jesus made an impact. And we're going to focus on two ways today that people journey throughout the world, two particular walks of life. And these are the walk of the younger brother and the walk of the elder brothers. A quick question for you guys. How many of you guys in here are oldest siblings in here? Got quite a few. There you go. How many of you guys are the youngest? Okay, a little less. That's all right. And how many of you guys are in the middle? That's right, middle children get attention too. That's awesome. Well, I do anyway. I mean, I picked a job that you guys have to pay attention to me, so that's kind of fun. But yes, I'm not that complicated, I know. But anyway, that's the last of the middle children will be mentioned, but we're going to focus today particularly on younger and older brothers and what these two groups in particular represent. Here again, the first two readings from our Gospel reading for today. Now, the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Right there, in verses 1 and 2, you have the two groups present. These two groups are also, of course, representative of different kinds of people and how they find happiness in the world. The first group you have are the younger brother types. You have these tax collectors and sinners. Now, I have nothing against IRS agents or anything of that nature, and if you're listening, I really don't. It's funnier in my mind anyway. I have nothing against them, but in Jesus' day and age, tax collectors were seen as the lowest of the low. Now, why was this? It's because the Jewish people, the people that Jesus was a part of, the nation they were a part of, they were under occupation by a foreign government that was the Romans. Tax collectors were seen as people that would steal from their heritage, their families even, and then gift those possessions to other people. And in addition, they could charge whatever they wanted for taxes and then pocket whatever was left over. For example, now imagine that the tax that you had to pay was $100. The tax collector would come by and say, you owe $150. You couldn't debate that. You couldn't argue that because he could throw you in prison. He could have you beaten. He could have you killed. All of it. But he could take the $150, pay the $100 to Rome, and then pocket the rest. They carve out a world for themselves off of the backs of others. Definitely the kind of people you want to hang out with, right? What's interesting is that Jesus seemed to think so. And then there's this other group that's here, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, the elder brothers of the story. They're the ones that strive to do what they're supposed to do. They're the do-gooders. They're the people that woke up for church on Sunday. Thank you very much. But their approach to a life well-lived was to follow the teachings of God's law to the letter. And in many cases, because literacy, it wasn't as prevalent, it wasn't as common in that day, they would actually memorize entire books of the Bible. I can barely memorize a verse or two. It's incredible what these people would know by heart. And whenever someone didn't follow the rules that God laid out, the Pharisees would treat them as exiles. So enter Jesus, this prolific teacher, who is seen happily in the presence of those exiles. The Pharisees mutter at this. I love that word, mutter. I don't know. But Jesus responds by telling three parables. That's his response to these Pharisees' mutterings. He tells three. First is the lost sheep. Lost coin is the second. And the third one is the story that we have today, the lost sons. So let's walk through it together with the rest of our time here and see how both sons fail and what the father does to try to bring them home. Act 1 of the story is all about the younger brother. Here again, verses 11 and 12. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So he divided his property between them. Now, in these first two verses, there's an insult and a miracle that takes place. Now, as a younger brother of two, he was entitled to a third overall of what the father had. Now, that's just how the cake was cut in that day and age. Eldest got two-thirds, youngest got one-third. Most of the person's wealth, though, most of what the father had, it wasn't actually in material possessions. It wasn't in money either. It was the land. Land that was passed down from generation to generation to generation over time. In a very real sense, you did not own the land. Well, you were a part of it. And this younger brother was supposed to stay with his father all the days of his life, maybe start a farm, start a family, all of it. But this son came to his father and basically said this, "Hey, I'm out of here. Rip your life apart. Give me what I'm owed, and I'm never coming back." As you can imagine, that's about as grave of an insult as could be levied on anyone. No first century Jewish son would ask this of his father. This son disobeyed his father to get what he wants. Now, we might not do it in as dramatic of a fashion, but there are many people, all people, who fit this younger brother description. Instead of staying in the father's presence, we choose to wander away and make our own happiness. The path of the younger brother is finding happiness in what's called self-discovery. What I mean by this is that they leave behind what they've had before and they try to carve out a world to their own image. Put it in a different way, the younger brother wants the father's stuff, but not the father. But it's the father's world, after all. But the younger brother, he wants no strings attached to the different gifts that God gives him. So he sets out on his own. Let's see how that adventure ends. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, what his father had really, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. after he had spent everything. There was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to the fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. Pig food as the end of his ambition. Just like the younger brother, just like the tax collectors and the sinners, when you tread the path of self-discovery, it is exciting for a time, but it does not and it cannot sustain. It only makes us long for home. Let's read on. When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am, starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father." This man, he's burned every bridge. He's out of options. So he thinks, "Well, my dad, when I was back at home, he was a reasonable man, a good boss. And maybe if I go back, I can just, you know, I can work for him. At least then I won't end up starving to death." So he returns empty-handed, empty-bellied to his family that was dead to him. And besides for death, this man really had no other options. So how does the father react when he sees his son? "But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants," shut up. No, I added that. Quick. "Put the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." So they began to celebrate. Now, there's a lot going on here. But talk about rolling out the red carpet. What's the first thing that the father did when he saw his son from far away? This man, he ran, he sprinted. Now, in those days, a first century Jewish patriarch, they never ran. The way I see it, and I can live by this mantra too, if you ever see me running, you probably should too. Most I do is jog. That's about it. I don't like running. But in that day, children ran. Women sometimes ran to, you know, keep up with the kids. Young men would run to fight in war. But an old Jewish patriarch, no, you don't run. You walk. You don't have to hurry. It's a good time. This man ran. It would have been a crazy sight. But that's what he does. He welcomes this messed up son with a hug and a kiss. He puts a ring on his finger. That's a signet ring, and that denotes a position of authority. He puts sandals, and not just any robe, but the best robe on him. And then he has the first century equivalent to a barbecue, invites the whole town as a celebration that his son is home. Meat was rare in those days. And maybe you'd kill a young goat for something like this. Maybe you'd have a lamb or something like that. But a fatted calf, that's about as good as you can get. It's insane generosity to his son that wasted everything away. This prodigal father restores his son to his former life. And it is the same with God to anyone who repents and believes in him. Especially the tax collectors and the sinners that Jesus seemed to spend all of his time with. That's Act 1, all about this younger brother. Let's move on now to Act 2. Let's read on. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near to the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of his servants and asked him what was going on. "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound." The older brother was angry and refused to go in. Now, it's the elder brother's turn to offend. Now, the whole town was invited to the feast, and the father's son, his eldest child, his pride and joy, refused to take part in the celebration. That's an insult. That's a really big insult. This man who was with the Father from start to finish, he did everything he was supposed to do. But for the older son, what keeps him out of the celebration, it isn't his sin. It's actually his righteousness. He used the Father just as much as the younger son did. But instead of disobeying to get what he wants, like the younger brother, this brother obeys his father to get what he wants. Now, this is just what the Pharisees did, which is interesting. And I imagine, I know I do, we fall into this trap too. This trap is known as the path of moral conformity. Now, what does this trap sound like? Let me give you a couple of examples. Maybe something like this: because I'm a good person, God owes me a good life. Or because I do the right things, God owes me a good life. Or even, I'm going to heaven when I die because I was a good person. The problem is that the older brother, this path of moral conformity, trying to do the right things to gain God's favor, it ends up using the Father, using God as a means to an end and not an end itself. Jesus is telling this parable to the Pharisees and to anyone who would treat religion as simply doing the right things and says, no, you've got it all wrong. The sin of the older brother is that he refuses to follow the Father's heart. He can't forgive. And as the family is restored, it becomes the elder brother's turn to rend it apart and leave his family behind. Let's read on and see what happens. So his father went out and pleaded with him, being the elder brother. Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never even gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fatted calf for him. My son, the father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. Three things I want to note in this section of text. First, notice that the father goes out and meets his son. This was also something a first century Jewish patriarch would not do. He'd send a servant, he'd send someone to go do it. But no, the father goes out and goes to meet his son. He doesn't care about the insult. He goes out and tries to bring his son home. The prodigal father's love knows no bounds. Second, if you look at the text, the elder son has already left the family. The elder brother calls his brother, this son of yours. And if you look at the text, he also fails to address his father as his father. It is noticeably lacking. In his mind, he's already gone. He refuses to welcome the younger son home and so loses home for himself. And then the third thing to note, can you imagine the Pharisees' reaction to the story? I mean, it's left open-ended. That's how it ends. Does the elder brother come back? Does he not? It's aimed at the Pharisees and those who believe in the path of moral conformity because they have a choice. The choice to come back into the feast or to remain all out on their own. The choice is theirs to make. Now, the younger son in this story had a Pharisee as an elder brother. And if we are honest with ourselves, we all end up like that younger brother from time to time. We needed a true elder brother, one that follows the prodigal heart of the Father. And this, of course, is none other than Jesus Christ himself. It's the job of an older brother to keep the family together, and that's what he does for sinners like you and sinners like me. He gives up his signet ring and takes up the crown of thorns. He gave up his finest robe and stripped bare for his passion. He gave us the seat of honor at the table in the feast and instead took up the seat of judgment that is found on the cross. He interceded for our behalf and paid the extravagant price of your redemption. Not because we were good, but because he loves the Father and follows his prodigal way. The way that invites everyone, all people, to the family feast. Now, if you haven't yet, I encourage you to take out your sermon notes. The second line from the bottom, that line is left blank in the notes. I want you to write your name in there. Jesus invites James Kirk to the family feast. Jesus invites each and every one of you, write down your name. And when you've written down your name, turn to your neighbor and say that Jesus invites you to the family feast. Use their name as well. Pretty amazing, right? This feast that will happen forever in heaven, and that we get a foretaste of in communion today when we share in this family feast of Christ's body and blood. You're invited. This is for religious people, for irreligious people. Jesus doesn't care. He prodigally gave away his life for you. So I encourage you today, how are you going to respond to that? As we close, take a look on your sermon notes if you still have them out. Two challenges I have for you today. Now, over the course of the sermon, if you haven't dozed off, thank you. But if you've followed along and if you've identified more so with the path of the younger brother, first of all, I want to say thank you so much for being here today. I encourage you this week, spend some time with your Heavenly Father. Get in the Word. Pray. Write down a time underneath that page, underneath that challenge right now that you'll do it. Make it a daily habit that you do each and every day. And if you're like the elder brother, first of all, repent. And then follow the example that's set by our true elder brother, Jesus. In all your striving, do not lose sight of our Father's loving heart. Seek out a younger brother in your life. I bet someone just popped in your head. I encourage you, write that name down on that blank space that's right there, right now, and invite that person to the feast. Strive to follow the way that our prodigal God is to us. Amen.